Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so anyway. You don't have to. Yeah. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
You did it wrong.
I know. What do I know about?
Well, your left hand does the bass, and then your right hand's
doing
the...
how that works.
Yeah, you were doing it completely. Do you play left-handed on the piano?
I do.
Interesting.
Yes, I play with both of them.
Wow. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott, or yeah. Me llamo es Scott.
Wow.
Thank you.
That is real great. Oh, my name is Hino. See? Anywhere else, it would be Hein, but in Spanish, it's Hino. Thanks for tuning in again tonight. We love it that you're here with us. And as you probably know by now, if you've listened any more than once or twice, this show is for all you songwriters and performers and musicians out there who are just trying to figure stuff out here in Music City.
That's right. And remember, we don't know a thing. Nope. We're out slinging songs during the day just like you guys are. We are able to find great people and bring them into the studio to pick their brains and answer your questions.
Yeah, and that means you can go to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow, or you can even hit us up on Twitter @TheMusicRowShow and chime in with your questions. The conversation just started right now.
I'm on it right now.
You are
well,
awesome.
Not on the Twitters.
Yeah, that's a little beyond you.
That's so. A little beyond me. Yeah. But I'm on the Facebooks, and I'm already on it. So if anybody
baby
wants to say hi, I'm listening.
Baby steps.
Hey, we have a very, very special show for y'all tonight.
Yeah, we do. We're taking the first hour to honor Little Jimmy Dickens and hear stories from some of his friends and family.
And then we have our very good friend, hit songwriter, recording artist Ray Scott. He's coming in to visit with us in hour two.
That is going to be awesome. All right, Scott. Why don't we get to it? Introduce these fine gentlemen.
Okay, well, 9 days ago, country music lost one of its most recognizable ambassadors and champions, Little Jimmy Dickens. He was the first country singer to circle the globe playing country music.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure if I read this right, he might even be the first one to ever hit the Opry stage with the bedazzled rhinestone suits.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was him, yeah.
He had pop crossover hits back when Carrie and Taylor's parents were in diapers. and yet he was always just been a regular guy from West Virginia. Until January 2nd, he was the oldest living member of the Grand Ole Opry, and he performed not just 2 weeks earlier, one last time at the Ryman. He was my favorite part of the Opry. I was telling Kevin here before the show started that I've been backstage at the Opry dozens and dozens of times. I only have two pictures of myself with anybody because all I ever wanted was Little Jimmy Dickens and Porter. So, you know, so he's just always my favorite part of the Opry. I was so glad I had the chance to see him on stage and honored to meet him. There's so much we already know about the man and his music and his legacy with country music. But we thought it would be kind of fun to bring some stories, maybe not so well known, and to hear those. So we asked his very good friend, hit songwriter Bobby Tomberlin, and Little Jimmy's nephew, Rod Willis, to come in and share some memories and some laughs with us. So, Bobby, Rod, it's great that you guys are here, and thank you for being here. Welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very glad you're here.
So, I guess, first off, tell us about Wednesday. I missed being there or Thursday for the service.
Well, you know, it's hard. It's hard to even talk about, I mean, at this point, because it's still just kind of like a dream, to be honest with you, the whole loss. But the service, it was a beautiful service, and I was very honored to sing a song that Robbie Witkowski and I wrote as an anniversary gift for Jimmy and Mona. We wrote that a few years ago, and I'll never forget, and I talked about this the other day. I remember playing it for the very first time. Robbie and I went over to the house, and they sat there holding hands, and then halfway through, they just started crying. Tears started falling, and Robbie and I, we got pretty choked up, too.
Oh, man.
And, but, you know, just never dreamed that I'd be singing that song at a memorial service, and it was hard. It was very hard, but, you know, Brad Paisley did an amazing job. He kind of... you know,
Brad Paisley is a close friend to
Mona and Jim. Many people don't realize that it's not only were they good friends on the stage, he and Jim, but it went much deeper. And they visit one another. Jimmy would go out and fish at his lake. Also, you know, Brad is in the home. There was a time, Ramona likes to share the story. He was away, I don't know if it was Canada, and he needed connection, and he had her number, so he was able to get her on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be times that he would call her, and they would just have dialogue, and it helped him through that time.
So you mean when you say he needed connection, he was just... He was away from home too long and needed to talk to someone.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's true. So when this was being put together and Mona reviewed the program, she felt strongly that it was she needed more Brad in it,
mm-hmm.
because he had been so near and dear to their hearts. And not only that, Brad also brought Jimmy into a new generation of people,
sure,
introduced him to them.
Mm-hmm.
He could have stayed with the hit May the Bird of Paradise Fly Up Your Nose, and he could have been just with Occultator, and which were wonderful in their day, but now he's able to be involved in the DVDs, and the younger generation is seeing this man that is iconic,
mm-hmm.
to right. The music industry.
What was the name of the group he was in with Bill and the Kung Pao?
The Kung Pao. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Buckaroos. Or
yes.
Buckaroos,
yes.
That's right.
Bill Anderson and
Bill and
George Jones.
And George Jones.
Jones,
yeah.
Yeah. They did that on a few of Brad's albums. They at the end of the album, they'd had this spoken word section. It was
right.
Great. Yeah.
Well, another thing, too, Brad, I remember one tour actually had the introduction by Little Jimmy on the screen.
Right.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah, he did an amazing job, and it was tough for him. I mean, it's so tough for everyone. And Vince Gill, you know, mm-hmm. he sang Go Rest High, and he was a great friend who also included Jimmy in two or three videos. Mm-hmm. And, Eddie Stubbs. I mean, it was...
all of these men and ladies involved on stage, their relationship with Jimmy went deeper than just the surface of performing. They were connected. Vince had been one of the musicians when Mona and Jim renewed their vows,
mm-hmm.
several years back. And, of course, Jimmy had a place in his heart for Connie Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
She was very near and dear to his heart, very special lady as far as he was concerned, and she is, I mean, very wonderful person. So all individuals were chosen, not surface, but depths of their heart as a family,
mm-hmm.
as a couple.
Wow.
And Mona knew that, and she wanted to use them to honor and to memorialize him.
Well, I heard it was just a beautiful, beautiful ceremony.
And I want to mention, too, and I know Mona would want me to, just how Pete Fisher has gone so far.
The general manager of the Opry.
Above
right?
and beyond mm-hmm. just being the general manager of the Grand Ole Opry. I mean, I know Rod has really seen it firsthand, he and his wife, Hope. I mean, what amazing mm-hmm. friends they've been and are.
Pete and Hope have been there for us in these last days of Jimmy. In a time of crisis, I could just get on the phone and text or call Pete 2 a.m. or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And within 30, 40 minutes, he was there, maybe less. And they just came alongside and shored us up and encouraged us and walked with us through some very, very difficult times, very troubled waters, and a lot of grief. But we're on the other side of it, and they're still there.
Yeah.
You know, the friendship remains, and it wasn't just a job. It was deeply from their hearts.
That's awesome.
Well, Bobby, tell us how you guys met. How did you first meet Jimmy?
I met Jimmy on a Grand Ole Opry cruise. I mean, I had met him backstage at the Grand Ole Opry several times, but I was working for Whispering Bill Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
And I was actually his sound engineer back in 1998 for like 3-4 years. And we would go on these Grand Ole Opry cruises. And Jimmy and Mona, I remember I met them on one of the cruises. And you know Robbie Witkowski.
Yeah.
Robbie worked for Jimmy for 15 years. And at that time, he was working for Bill. And we just hung out in the casino and would set, you know, hang out with Jimmy and Mona at the rest, you know, at the restaurant and some at the dinners. And we just really hit it off. And that's where the friendship started. And Robbie actually went to work for Jimmy. And when Robbie had to be out of town, he would call me and, you know, he would see if I was available maybe to take Jimmy to the Opry or maybe go to Albuquerque, you know, or go to Gatlinburg with him on a show. And then the friendship, it just got stronger from there. And my gosh, everything from putting up Christmas lights at the house to, you know, on occasion going to the doctor, taking him to the doctor when Robbie couldn't, or
right.
or going to a yard sale, or maybe to a fish fry in Columbia, Tennessee. I mean, just so many, oh, so many wonderful memories. And no doubt, it's, you know, it really, it's one of the highlights, if not the highlight of my time here, because I've learned so much from Jimmy Dickens. I mean, I learned about kindness. I mean, really, this guy was one of the kindest souls that I ever witnessed, and he was so giving of his time to people. And I never saw him, you know, be rude. I can honestly say I never saw him be rude to anyone. You know, it didn't matter what store we were in or if we were at the gas station or at the Opry backstage. I mean, he had time. And, you know, it's funny, on Opry Day, I work, I do gigs. I'm out of town a lot, but it was always funny. I would look at my calendar. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks. I mean, I loved going and picking him up, and he wanted to be picked up at 3:30.
Mm-hmm. And when was call time?
Oh,
seven?
Yeah. Okay. 7 o'clock. And he loved to go over to this little place across the street here. And he would hang out and meet fans for like an hour and a half. And oh my gosh, no telling how many hundreds of people that he touched and spent time with and would walk over to their table and sign autographs. And just, and he wanted to know about them. I mean, on so many occasions, he would say, now, where are you from? What do you do? Right. And a true gentleman.
Did he, I'm just curious, I have this image in my head that, you know, I only ever see him with the big shiny suit, the nudie suit. How often did he wear that, you know?
Oh, no.
Never. Just,
no.
He just a regular guy offstage.
Changed at the Opry building.
At the Opry house.
Okay.
Yeah. No, the biggest guy I've ever known. Wow. I mean, really.
However, back in the day when he would have introduced the nudie suit, he would have had to worn it into the Ryman because there weren't any dressing rooms there.
Aha. Interesting.
Yes.
Well, you know, on the surface, you would kind of say that he kind of is an unlikely person to be an Opry or any country star. What was it about him that made his success and that made audiences just eat him up? And
he was a performer.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did he sing well, as many of the performers must be able to do to achieve success.
Right.
When he went onto a stage, he owned it, and he performed.
Yeah.
And that energy, that dynamic presentation, caught the eye of the crowd, and that helped him to stand out. Among others.
Do you know if that came naturally to him, or did he have to learn that early on, and how maybe he learned that craft?
Well, he talked to me about, you know, artists like the Bells Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He spent a lot of time over in his neck of the woods, I guess, in the early years. He learned a lot from them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mr. Acuff. He loved Roy Acuff. And Minnie Pearl. He learned a lot from Minnie. I remember on some of the occasions when I would travel with him at a show, he would tell me about, you know, what side of the stage you go, you know, you enter from, and then how you leave a stage. And he's like, Minnie shared that with me.
Wow.
And he learned about timing. He learned a lot about
I want to know what that is. What is that about entering from one side or
going
the
other? Well, I mean, if it was there, he would just talk about coming from the left side. And then enter. I mean, I don't know. But it meant a lot to him.
Yeah.
I remember that, actually. That just crossed my mind.
Wow. It worked.
Yeah, it worked for him. And he just always gave it, you know, 100%. He wanted those people to really be entertained. I mean, that was so important. It wasn't going through the motions.
No.
Never.
No.
Going through the motions for him. He wanted to give it, you know, over 100%. That meant everything to him. And he did right up till the end. I was with him that last night. At the
December 20th.
December 20th.
Yeah.
He had turned 94 the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like the perfect evening, guys. His wife, Mona, was there. Daughter, Pam, was there. Granddaughter was there. Buddy Emmons. Mm. Steve Fischel actually brought Buddy Emmons out to see him. And Buddy hadn't seen Jimmy in years. And, of course, you know, Jimmy discovered Buddy up in Detroit. And he was a part of Jimmy's band. And he went out on stage. They had the big birthday cake. Bill Anderson gave the greatest introduction. I mean, after the Opry, I called Bill. I said, my gosh. What a perfect introduction. Hmm. And Jimmy went out there and had fire in his performance. I mean, in his eyes. And Mona, I'll never forget. Mona, his wife, and I stood on the side of the stage, and we just looked at each other and it was like unreal. He bent the legs during the Larry Tucker solo, and I'm like, look at him. I mean,
at 94.
At 94.
And, man, oh, man.
And he was signing autographs in the, you know, in the little alley there behind the Ryman. And it was interesting that night. Now, looking back, so many artists wanted their picture with him. Ricky Skaggs, you know, Marcia Campbell here at WSM, she came up and wanted a picture. And then Buddy, Kenny Sears.
Right.
So many people got pictures that night.
Nice. Well, listen, we need to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more memories of Little Jimmy Dickens here on the Music Rush Show. Stick around. All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Sleeping at the Foot of the Bed, Little Jimmy Dickens. Nice. We are here with Bobby Tomberlin and Roger. You'd like to prefer
Rod.
Roger or Rod?
Rod.
Rod Willis, who happens to be Little Jimmy's nephew, and we're just sharing some stories. And we were just talking during the break about what it was like to go out on the road with Jimmy. And I think, Bobby, you were saying you had some stories there about that.
Yeah, well, like I mentioned earlier, when his dear friend and the guy who worked with him for 15 years, Robbie Witkowski, couldn't make it, I always loved it when Robbie had to call me.
Yeah.
Because I loved going out on the road. I remember Albuquerque, you know, you'd go into the airport and young, old, doesn't matter what age, everyone would be like, Little Jimmy. And he would stop and take a picture, sign an autograph. And he was so simple, though. I mean, when we would go to a town, he didn't want to go to no fancy restaurant. He would like to go to a Crystal or just something very, very, yeah, exactly. I mean, and again, he would want to get to the venue very, very early. Like, we're talking 4-5 hours before showtime. I remember a county fair in Cullman, Alabama. He didn't have to be there till 5 o'clock, but we arrived at noon. But he loved to scope out the venue and the stage and get comfortable and look at the seating. I mean, like I said earlier, this guy was dedicated to giving the best show possible. He wanted to, you know, he wanted to see how the stage was set up. And I mean, yeah, I mean, what can I say?
Well, and he was known for all of his novelty songs, but man, he could sing a country ballad. Like, I mean, just make you feel every word of it was the truth, you know? I mean,
what a show. I mean, the emotions you could feel watching a little Jimmy Dickens show. I mean, his great jokes, his comedy, and then a recitation like Raggedy Ann,
mm-hmm.
and then a ballad like Life Turned Her That Way. And then mm-hmm. right after just ripping your heart out, he would go into, you know, take an Old Cold Tater or Mountain Dew. And, yeah, I've never seen anything like it. I really haven't. I've seen some of the greatest, but I don't know that I've ever seen a greater entertainer.
Yeah.
Really.
Wow. Go ahead.
Well, we were just also talking, you said that it was kind of ironic that he just only recently in the last few years started mentioning Hank Williams, who I'm guessing he knew back in the day.
Oh, they were buddies.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But he hadn't really talked about him much, but then he started. What was he saying?
You know, I'm from down in Alabama below Montgomery in Hank Williams country. So I was raised knowing a lot of the family of Hank Williams and old band members. And I learned very early how close little Jimmy Dickens and Hank Williams, you know, their friendship, how close it was. And actually, I just learned recently when Hank, you know, would have his issues,
mm-hmm.
that Hank's mother would call Jimmy. And uh-huh. he actually drove down to Montgomery on two or three occasions to visit Hank. They traveled, did a lot of shows together. They toured Germany together. And at that time, I think they'd only been here just a few months, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy has told me many times, he says, when I was home and Hank was home, Hank would call and he'd say, Tater. And Jimmy was like, what? What do you want? He says, come over here. He said, what for? He said, I just want to look at you. I mean, I can't tell you how many times Jimmy shared that. And, of course, you know the story on Hey, Good Looking.
Hey, Good Looking. Yeah.
I mean, well, Hank, refresh our memory.
Hank Williams wrote that. He told Jimmy, he says, Tater, you need a hit song. I'm going to write you one. They were on Henry Cannon's plane. That's Minnie Pearl's husband. Yeah, they were out on a show date with Minnie. And Jimmy held the, you know, pen and paper. And
20
Hank,
minutes later.
Yeah, and Hank, you know, wrote the song right there. And then a week later, Jimmy runs into Hank, and Hank says, well, I'm sorry, but I cut your song to Tater. And, you know, and Jimmy, you know, they were friends. It didn't bother Jimmy.
Yeah.
And Jimmy actually attended Hank's funeral down in Montgomery, mm-hmm. Alabama. And, I mean, it was just a very close friendship, and he talked about Hank a lot. Just a few weeks ago, I remember we were on Briley Parkway, and he says, you know, you just don't know it at the time. You don't realize how special that friendship is. And he says, here it is years later, and I still miss my friend.
Wow. Hmm.
Wow. And that was just a few weeks ago he shared that with me.
That's amazing.
Wow. Well, speaking of friends that last a long, long, long time, I'd love to talk about Mona. I know. I think she's listening right now. And Miss Mona, we love you, and we've been thinking about you. But talk about how they met, Rod, and their relationship.
Well, their relationship starts way back. Some of her first encounters with him was at going to the public fair and seeing him.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she was an impressionable teenager, and much like they would swoon over Elvis, she was doing that over Jim.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And later, they would marry in 71. And there's a lot to that story of the marriage that people don't realize, the ramifications of it. But his wife, prior to Mona, had been killed in an accident,
mm-hmm.
and he was actually recovering from the loss. He was in a state of grief, and he met someone in her that he felt he wanted to spend the rest of his life with. And when she stepped into the marriage, she didn't know what all was involved, but because of his grief, he had not... And, of course, because of his trust in his fellow man, he needed some help so far as emotionally and financially,
mm-hmm.
and in his career, which was he had had great success before with Bird of Paradise. He had circled the globe. All of these experiences and victories had arrived and were gone,
mm-hmm.
and now he needed something more. And Mona was the more. She stepped up and she took his hand, and basically without a word, it was implied, we can do this together. And she began to work within the finances and look at his career and realize there is another direction this needs to take. And a lot is dependent upon those who believe in him.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't feel like where he was, he had the support that he needed. And she began to make changes. And one of the joys of her life was when she arrived. Well, it wasn't a joy when she arrived in the marriage, but she discovered he yet owed for the house. Well, her goal was to pay this off. And there came a day on his birthday, some years later, that she handed him the deed to the house. And he opened it and he looked at it. He said, well, what is this? She said, well, it's the deed to your house. And where did you get it?
Good question. Said,
I paid the house off. Well, how did you do that? Well, you know, she said, I saved money. And I have paid it off. It's paid for. It's yours. And that was his birthday gift. And that's one of the great joys that is in her heart today.
Wow. So, a special note to my wife, honey, are you listening to that? Because that's pretty cool.
Cut back on shopping.
And when they married, I mean, she worked jobs, yes, other jobs.
She actually waited tables and did what she needed to help with the finances and bring them to where they are today, which is very, very comfortable.
Right. Yeah.
And that is because of her. Jimmy had a magnanimous heart. If you liked it, he'd give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you didn't like it and he thought you were looking at it in an approving way, he'd give it to you.
Oh, man.
You know, and she put a stop to that. You know, there was some control over it.
Right.
And one of the individuals makes a comment. They see great humor. They went out to dinner one night, and they were ordering, and Jimmy looks and pours over the menu, and finally he says, well, I'm going to have this. And Mona raised up and looked. She said, no, you're not. You're going to have this over here. So that gives you an idea of how they came to where they are today.
Well, thank God.
Was she looking
for
out
Mona.
For his health, or was it just too expensive? Or
it wasn't too expensive. We have to err on the side of health.
Gotcha.
When we got to West Virginia, telling of how she helped him,
right.
I took him on a road trip in August to West Virginia, and we checked into the motel. And after we'd checked in, he had his room, I had mine, and I said, you know, I'll be back in a little while. And I walked in the room later to where he was, and he was standing there, and he had this paper in his hand. He said, we can't stay here. And I'm going, well, why is that? He said, have you seen the price of this room? And I go, well, yeah, but this is where Mona wants you to stay. Well, we can't do that. So I got on the phone and called her back here in Nashville, and she had to assure him it was okay to remain there. He could afford it, no problem. So the next morning, I go back into the room, and he's dressed, and he looks at me, and he said, I'm packed. Why are you packed? Have you seen the price of this room?
And this was just this past August.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just this
wow.
August.
Yeah, now you took him back to West Virginia, to
yes.
And he visited his sisters and,
yes.
And just kind of caught up with some old...
Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah, talk about
Before
that.
Before I go to that, I've got to tell you one more piece of
sure.
this. He was never still. He was always moving. And I realized that, and I called down the front desk, and I said... I'm going to tell you who you have up here. And I explained who he was. And I said, now, sometimes he gets out of his, will get out of his room, maybe, and come down into your lobby. And if he would do that, will you please call me? And they said, oh, he's been down here 3 times.
Too late. You were quick enough.
He was looking for his room.
Oh.
So, yes, we had a great time going back it was a special time. I strongly feel that God smiled upon it and gave him this time of peace, time of just rest. Jimmy was, there were times he was not a talkative person. You could drive for miles and he'd never say a word.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nothing wrong with that because, you know, he was connected with you, and he would always tell me if I needed, if I had done something wrong in driving.
And, that's awful nice of him.
That was considerate. Yeah. Anyway.
Looking out for you.
Yeah.
We got back for the purpose that he was compelled to return. He talked about this and talked about it. And he had to go this year.
Mm-hmm.
Before fall, and he wanted to go back to his mother's grave and to his grandparents' grave, to their home site, and just visit his sisters. He loved his sisters. They were just near and dear to his heart. He has two there in Bolt, and then he has one in Ohio. But anyway, the ones in Bolt is who we got to visit with, Shirley and Edna. When we arrived, we went out to visit with Edna and Shirley. And that evening, after we'd returned to the hotel, we went to a restaurant, and we actually couldn't get waited on. And so I said, Jimmy, you know, I really would like to go back to Shirley's because she had such fine food. oh, he said, just call her. And I did, and she said, come ahead. Well, we got there, and all of that was gone.
All the food?
All the food was gone. And she prepared us with the most unusual sandwich. It was fried bologna, a fried egg, and cheese on a bun.
Yum.
And it was delicious. And that was our evening meal. And then the next day, we went to the site where he had been born, and we went and to the gravesite of his grandparents, and he also to the site of Farmer's Store. Farmer's Store was the place when he was just going to school, little tyke. He would arrive early in the morning before anyone had come to the store to stoke the fire, stir it up.
Mm-hmm.
He received a nickel a day for doing that. And I have a picture of him standing there on the front porch of the remains of that store. Now, it's very much intact, except they removed a portion of the second level, but still a solid structure. And just those highlights, the spot where his grandfather went to the coal mine every day. These were great experiences and treasures of his heart that he wanted to polish again.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard him go into the house and say to his sister after we were visiting late at the night on the side porch of the house, he said, now, are there any other nieces and nephews or family that we can call to come up so I can see them? Wow. He just wanted it one last time.
It's almost like he knew. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, yes. We need to take a break. We're going to be back in just a second with more with Rod Willis, Bobby Tamberlin, talking about Little Jimmy Dickens.
And just want to remind you that this segment is brought to you by our good friends over at Toyota of Cool Springs.
Yes, it is.
As many of you know, Scott and I are both Toyota drivers, and we actually love going to that dealership.
That's right. And why? Because they have great deals, and they're committed to just giving everybody that walks in an excellent experience. So we go in there and get serviced, and it's just a great place. Our cars get serviced.
Thank you. What is wrong with you? Thank you.
What's their website? Let's get out of this quickly.
Well, go talk to George. He's the owner. He'll take care of you.
Take care of your car.
Their website is toyotaofcoolsprings.com. We're going to be right back here with more of our Little Jimmy Dickens tribute on the Music Row Show.
Jukebox and you slip a nickel in, you can bet your bottom dollar that the record starts to spin. You'll hear a fiddle and a guitar with a honky tonkin sound. It's that hillbilly fever that's spreading all around.
Oh yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Hillbilly Fever. Little Jimmy Dickens doing that one. That's a great tune.
I encourage people to go on YouTube and watch old videos of him.
Oh, yeah.
Because just going back to something you guys said at the very beginning, we're here with Bobby Tomberlin and Rod Willis. Rod was little Jimmy's nephew. Bobby, dear friend. When he'd sing, he'd put that foot down. And, I mean, he was singing from his toes up. I mean, that it wasn't just from his throat. He was getting it all out there.
Yes, he sure was. He was the ultimate performer. I think a lot of the musicians today could learn from that. Not only that, but the professionalism that he carried onto the stage in attire. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean everybody needs to buy a nudie suit, but, presentation to the public means a lot.
Right.
Well, since he was, we talked about this earlier, since he was the first one to kind of go on stage with that the nudie suit. In case anybody is wondering, nudie is not, that's the name of the guy who made the suits. There, it wasn't like
Hollywood.
A nudie suit.
Yeah.
It was those shiny, sparkly suits that you see him wear on stage all the time. What was the reaction the first time he showed up on one of those, since he was the pioneer of that?
Well, I'm not sure the reaction, but I do know that he, after he had purchased it, he kept it at the house and wouldn't wear it for a long time because
really?
He was afraid of the reaction.
It was too over the top, he thought?
He thought it was.
Uh-huh.
But the reaction was so phenomenal that Porter Wagner went out and bought some.
yep. Bill Anderson's been known to wear a few as well. Yeah.
Ernest Tubb.
Yep.
I wanted to mention something else about Jimmy at the Opry. You know, I mentioned he would arrive very early. Well, when he hosted, a segment,
right.
He would want to really learn about the acts that were his guests. If it was a new act, he would ask me. He was like, well, tell me about these guys. And, of course, the Opry eventually would print out some info on all of the guests. But that really was important to him, too, to really give a great introduction and go meet the guest. And
That says a lot about him, because that's, a lot of people in the business may not do that. They just read the intro that was handed to them or something, and they wouldn't take the time to really find out about people. And that says a lot about him, I think.
Yeah. Let's, we've gone long the last couple segments.
Yeah.
Let's catch up here. We're going to take another break. We're going to be back with one last segment with Bobby and Rod talking about Little Jimmy Dickens. You're listening to the Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
You sure have been quite a doll, Raggedy Ann. Yes, sir. Quite a doll.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show.
But I didn't really know you until I started making these trips up here.
That's Little Jimmy Dickens doing his classic Raggedy Ann.
And now I'm beginning to
we were just talking about that a little while ago, how you could tear your heart out with that one.
We're here with Bobby Tomberlin, Rod Willis. Rod was Little Jimmy's nephew. Bobby, on your Facebook the other day, you shared a story about a fan that called him and had a bunch of Mint 78s records of his.
Oh, wow.
Can you quickly tell that story?
Yeah. Robbie Witkowski, who worked with Jimmy, called me. It was during the holiday season a couple of years ago, and he says that Jimmy received a letter from a lady over in the East Tennessee area, but I'm not talking Gatlinburg or Pigeon Forge. This was just totally out in the middle. I mean, I don't even know how he found the house. And it was about a 3-hour trip one way. And the lady wrote Jimmy saying she had all of these mint condition 78 recordings of Jimmy, Carl Smith, Jimmy Rogers, the Carter family, and others, and wanted to send them to him. Well, instead, he was like, let's go pick them up. And this lady was a huge fan who used to live in Louisiana, and she and another friend would ride the Greyhound bus to Nashville like once a month just to see Jimmy and Carl Smith on the Opry stage at the Ryman.
And here he shows up at her doorstep.
At the doorstep.
Wow.
This little house, like I said, out in the middle of nowhere. And it was one of the most beautiful times I've ever experienced. He, Robbie and Jimmy and I, we went into the house, sat down, had coffee, and she just was so excited. I mean, that was the highlight of her life. And he was so gracious, telling her what a beautiful home, and was just Yeah, and I took actually several pictures of that from that day, and I just treasure those.
Hmm. That's amazing.
I wanted to mention, too, Jimmy and Mona's granddaughter, April, is listening in. She just sent me an email, and also, as we mentioned earlier, Mona and their daughter, Pam, they're listening, too, tonight.
Well, sweet. Thank you for listening, and thank you for sharing Jimmy with us.
Yeah, absolutely. We were just talking earlier. I think we might all like to have Mona as our business manager.
Well, actually, some friends from New York actually just emailed that in and said, do you think she'll be
is she available?
Yeah, right. I wanted to mention, too, Larry Tucker. Larry Tucker was Jimmy's guitar player for 28 years.
Oh, wow.
And played with him right up to the end on the Grand Ole Opry. And Larry lives in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and he would drive in every weekend to play with Jimmy.
Nice.
So I wanted to give him a little shout out.
Very nice.
Well, we have about a minute left, Rod. What would you like the world to know? One last thing to know about your uncle.
He was an ambassador of goodwill for the Opry. He never spoke disparagingly about the Opry. And he was also the same for Nashville, wherever he toured. Also, Jimmy was a family man. He loved his daughters. He loved his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren.
Hmm.
His nieces and nephews as well. He just had such a heart for whatever you were involved in, no matter what station of life you are in, even if it wasn't family.
Yeah.
He was a man of great compassion and a great giving heart.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing all these great stories with us. We really appreciate it. Of course, we're very sorry for your loss, but we're very thrilled you were here with us tonight. You as well, Bobby. Thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you.
Very honored that you would invite us.
Yeah, and thank you for honoring our friend.
Absolutely.
Everybody's friend.
Everybody's friend. Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to be back with, we're going to be talking more country music with Ray Scott.
That's right, here on the Music Row Show. So just come back in a few minutes.